Okay, so we're going to talk a bit about diversity and recruiting in the CS classroom, obviously. A little bit about us really briefly. I'm Julina Clement. I'm the Director of Educational Technology at Archer School for Girls, which is a 6-12 girls school in Los Angeles. I've been in education in various ways, teaching in Japan, after school gang intervention, performing arts, special needs, elementary public school, you name it. I've been doing it for about 14 years. Now I'm here, finished master's in educational technology, fell in love with programming. I grew up in the Bay Area, so we were living in what was the rest of the country's future, in a sense. My mom was an ed tech coordinator for our district. She taught at Cupertino High School. You may have heard of Cupertino. I think there's this company called Apple there. It's become a thing. And so I grew up around this idea, this mindset, and that was quite a long time ago. So in a sense, I have become my mother, which is basically what I'm telling you. And I've been able to kind of pull together influences from arts, from language. I was a music undergrad and programming sciences and the like.
And I'm Erin Harris. I teach middle school and upper school computer science. So 6th to 12th grade at the same school with Julina. I don't have like a whole spiel, but shortly after I graduated from UCLA, I started working at Archer and fell in love with teaching computer science. My undergrad is in material science and engineering, and I took like a few courses in computer science, but after I graduated, I kind of found the beauty of it and really wanted to continue like teaching it.
Yeah, awesome. So we're obviously gonna talk a bit about diversity and recruiting, and we're gonna get into some solid strategies of what you can do to get more into your classroom, to get more whatever it is you're looking for. And that is the how, but first I really wanna go over something that often gets overlooked because people will assume that you're on the same page, but I'm gonna spend a minute to talk a little bit about why do you want students in computer science. So off the top of your head, can any of you tell me why is it you're looking to recruit students, or why would you motivate students to take computer science or to study it? Yes.
Because most of the jobs today need technology as a component, computer science as one of them. It's a demanding.
Right, huge demand. It's a skill that everyone's gonna need, they say. Any other ideas, any other reasons? Yes. Absolutely. And you had one?
I want my students to think differently.
You want your students to think differently. I like that. So there's a lot of messaging out there. But first, let's talk a little bit about technology in education. So if you know Seymour Papert, he's the godfather of technology in education. He is huge, known most for Logo programming, writing Lego Mindstorms, working at MIT Design Media Lab. He was incredibly influential. And he had this idea, right? When you're looking at technology in education, you're really only able to serve one side of the triangle. You're either serving the system, you're serving the teacher, or you're serving the students. Serving the system, you think about data analysis and collection so that you can figure out how to make roads better. That serves the system, ultimately. When you think about a smart board or a learning management system, that's serving the teacher, that's making it easier for the teacher. Ultimately, what he would aspire to do and what I would hope that you would aspire to do is to serve the student, right? You want to give them the skills, you want to give them the training, you want to give them the agency to be able to do something and to make something and to participate in this world actively. That is what computer science principles, that's what programming is all about for us, for me, for our school, and that's really, I think, one of the most fundamental reasons you need to think about when you are recruiting. So students get a lot of messaging right now. You know, there's toys that are programmed at coding. There's summer camps. There's listicles. There's articles. There's TV news. Everyone's talking about how cool it is to be a programmer, or how important it's going to be, or how many jobs there will be. And I think in order to really filter through that, you have to hone in on that why again. So why are you doing it? Okay, it's one of my favorite quotes. The combination of tech and humanity is where that sweet spot is. Tech is not neutral. Technology is not neutral. It elevates the person. It makes the voice louder. It makes you stronger. It can be an enabler or it can be an accelerator. So bringing in that humanity and talking about that aspect of it, that is, I think, where the true motivation lies. You ready? So looking at kind of the history of tools and the development, like what separates us, what helps us evolve, like how do we trace the patterns? We're able to develop tools that help us control our environment, that help us solve problems. If it's, you know, rudimentary tools from rocks and sticks, going to the Swiss Army knife to smartphone, I have a thermostat in my house that can tell when I walked by, it's creepy, kind of. you know, we're able to control our environment. That's a thing. Technology solves problems. So what we do choose to do with it will influence what happens next. Now, it said, another great quote, this is from Bob McIntosh, who teaches a like tech in global environment studies course. I think this is a common sentiment. This is something that you'll see reflected in books like Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, which is a highly recommended read. So if you can't open it or alter it, you don't own it. So when we talk about learning computer science, why would you want to do it? It's because I want to be able to function in a world where if my thermostat breaks, I can open it and kind of look at it and not be subjected to whoever decides to come in and charge me $500 to do that, right? I have the power, I have the agency, I am not afraid to engage because I have the experience and I am an active participant in this world. So I won't spend too much time talking about, well, I'm really excited about the subject. I'm happy to go on for lengths about it. But we talk about the history of programming. You know, you've heard all the stories about Ada Lovelace and you've got Grace Hopper. Those are great stories. They're really motivating to some people. It's not as motivating to me. It never was as a kid. I think that's so cool that somebody did something great, but I'm not sure how that applies to me. When I learned about this as an act of subjugation, so this is another recommended read, Geek Sublime, it's a new book. It traces the path of this man's progress through writing, fiction, and programming. And he brings a lot of connections, but he also talks about the history of India. So in India, you know, in colonization times, they brought in some tech schools, but they only taught to a certain level because they didn't want the people to have the skills to start their own businesses and to be self-sufficient. So they started sending people to MIT. They went abroad, they went to England to learn skills and eventually came back, and independence kind of came through that process. Looking at women in programming, you've heard the stories, right? Coding used to be for women because it was like typing work. Once they found out it was much more than that, it became a man's world. So learning about Ada Lovelace, learning about Grace Hopper, that's cool, but learning about what has been taken from me and my kind, that made me angry and that made me want to learn. Because I wanted to be an active participant, I wanted to be in control. You know, I'm really motivated when I'm angry. I don't know about you guys. So programmers master a system they know they can change. I think you'll see this, the more you learn a language, the more you know you can tweak it. What you're doing with this agency and what Deborah Meyer, who's another like great in education, she talks about how giving people agency and teaching in that manner really prepares people to be true Democrats, to be active participants in our country. With that subjugation, you're conditioning people to just be controlled, right? If you can't control, you're just setting yourself up to be controlled. Who would those people grow up to be? Who would those people grow up to vote for? What do you want in your country? What do you want in your students? What do you want them to do? So the next thing, you know, Aya Bedir, Little Bits, that company, she's kind of another person really at the forefront of bringing that agency to students and helping them explore things in not constrained ways. Her goal is that we should be teaching creativity and confidence. Again, that's like what I was saying earlier, don't be intimidated, don't be scared, open it up, figure out how it works, play with it, have that agency, have that exploration, that curiosity, and the critical thinking that can take you forward. And that really comes from computer science principles. So, what do you want in computer science? Why do you want students there? I feel like this will really drive any efforts you make at including people, right? Because you look at the people who stand to gain the most from this are the ones that are being marginalized, are the ones that don't want to be controlled, or the ones that have something to say. And that is every single one of our students. That is everyone, literally. So on a more upbeat note.
So we talk more like logistically and give some context of what our school's like and how we implement CS50 a little less inspirational. So
well, this is what it looks like at our school.
Yeah, this is what it looks like at our school. And then we'll wrap up talking about like strategies that have worked for us and like overarching successes. So my core, I taught the CS50 course. It was 8 students, mostly seniors, 1 sophomore, 1 junior, 1 freshman. It's a science elective credit, but we at Archer don't do AP sciences. So none of my students took the AP. And I know that's like a concern for some other teachers, that like how their students will perform on the AP test. But I sort of like front loaded it to them saying, this is the first time we're teaching this course. This is the first time the AP is happening. It is up to you if you would like to do it. I will happily work through it with you. But it's not going to be the main focus of our course. So just like what an average day for us looked like was 4 to 3 like 1 hour a week sessions. Did mostly flip teaching, so they would watch like part of lecture video at home, do a little homework. We'd introduce a new topic, and then I give them a lot of like lab time to work on the problem sets. And we're a one-to-one school, so every student has a laptop, and they are, so they can work on it at home as well, but since this is an elective, I try to like carve out that time for them that they could get things done in class. I also had like office hours, so students frequently would come and meet me. And then something that was a huge success was the ability for students to resubmit their problem sets. So if they did not like a grade that they got, I let them at any point in the year fix something and can get 100%. So it tells them like the culture of error, right? So you may have not liked how you did before, but you have the opportunity to fix it and learn from it, right? So we did deviate a bit after chapter 4, so after like C wrapped up, I could see my students were kind of like slowing down a bit. It was January, and for seniors that was like they're already checking out. So I asked them like what they would want to learn about, and if they want to continue with the curriculum or if they want to deviate a bit. So we got into Arduino and processing, and we still covered like basic web programming. So this is one of our projects that we did was a, this is my Instagram, were these like robotic arms. So I like front loaded it as like in, prosthetics right now, the big thing is like actually having like robotic arms. So students worked on this project for like a week. I just said, here's a whole bunch of art supplies. Here's some servos. Here's an Arduino. Do your thing. And you can obviously hear how excited they were to do this. But yeah, I front-loaded it as that, like, currently in, like, biotech, they're trying to create, like, robotic prosthetic arms. So girls were, like, really interested in it. They could see how computer science can be related into other fields, right? So things about this course that worked. Class/group problem solving. As much as I thought they wanted to work independently, they loved working on problems together. So what is that box with a bunch of locks on it? Have any of you heard of Breakout EDU? Yeah, so I created a box and I've like purchased their supplies, like a percentage went to them, went to the company. And we created our own like breakout for our finals. So for our fall semester final and our spring semester final, we like split up 2 teams and they had to like solve these problems and like get through the box, and like it ended in like a scavenger hunt and everything. So it was really fun. That is like one of their like funnest experiences of the course.
On that really quickly, we did not allow them to use computers.
Yeah.
They had to walk through assembly code by hand, and it drew from some of the problem sets earlier in the semester because we were like for the fall semester. But they had to do it by hand. So they had to remember and recognize and be able to reason it out.
So it was like reading code versus creating it. So it was a little easier to ask them to like analyze versus create. So other things that worked, the real world problems. So I think CS50's curriculum is great because it actually focuses on like real world applications. And especially for girls, girls are thinking, why am I learning this? Most teenagers think that. Girls, I can guarantee you, are thinking it even more. They are like, what is the point? How does this relate to my world? How does this relate to other people? So when you have real world problems, they're more engaged. The allowing students to resubmit any assignment. already explained that. And then asking for feedback. I ask for feedback for my students like 2 times throughout the year. One of it being just like, how do you feel about this? I was trying to do like asynchronous learning where students did work more independently. That did not work. So when I started to see that it wasn't really working for them, I asked them, I was like, how do you feel about this? Do you want to continue doing it this way? And they were like, not really. I'd prefer to like work together more. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. But so that's something I don't recommend is asynchronous learning, having students going at their own pace, especially for girls. Like they need to feel connected to this little classroom, your little community of computer science. They need to feel connected to it. So when they're working so independently, they don't really feel as though they're connected. I didn't front load pair programming, and I wish I could have done that because when we went and did like projects together, certain students, as you would expect, would like take over the whole project and then like one would kind of sit there. So I wish I had front loaded that. And then last thing is sometimes the CS50 culture is hard to maintain in a classroom just because you have to do stuff like take attendance and like fire drills and other things where, you know, interrupt the like flow of your classroom.
So kind of to expand on what computer science looks like at our school, perhaps for context, this is a look at our schedule. We have a 7-day rotating schedule. So all this is the Monday, Wednesday, or like Monday through Friday structure. We actually have an A through G.
Yeah.
J's, where they only go through 5 periods a day. So they have 7 classes, but they rotate through them. They'll have a course at different times of day. And then interspersed between that are these things called X block in yellow. Those are non-academic creative exploration opportunities to pursue something. It's prescribed for middle school, and for upper school it's free. So it's a bit like genius hour, if you will. These two different kind of systems provide different opportunities for students to engage with computer science. So they start out in middle school doing a 6th grade rotation of coding, which used to be actually in our language rotation. So they would do Spanish, French, Chinese, and coding. There's gonna be a bit of shift in the next coming year, but they're still gonna go through the coding quarter. From there, they have the option to dive into either web app game design or pursue kind of little 1-day or 5-week snippets of coding in some other capacity. And then in upper school, we have a web app game design course, which is more intro level. And then we have what has been our CS50, which we actually call Advanced CS. We're a smaller school. We have under 500 students for the 6th grade, 7 grades.
Yeah.
And we don't offer CSA on campus, but they can take it through One Schoolhouse, which is an online learning community for single-sex education. So because it's through a third party, they're able to have a more conditioned path to the AP test. Although they are able to take the AP test if they were to take CSP, we don't steer towards it. As we mentioned, our science decoupled from APs completely, so kind of took the decision out of our hands. The other opportunities in upper school, we have some honors research courses. They are able to implement either chemistry, biochemistry, or engineering. So that's up to them if they want to go on a path that involves programming. We also have an engineering and design class, ends up working a lot with it. And then there's the Inventing Limits in MIT program. If you're familiar, I think it's like a 3 or 4 year program where they develop a product, they design it, they prototype it, they pitch it, they come here and share it. We did that process. We were on an off year, but that was another opportunity for them to get involved. So outside of the classroom and campus, we decided to do a hackathon. We were so interested in the idea. The CS50 hackathon was a bit intense. The midnight pizza deliveries and IHOP at 4 a.m. was a little beyond the threshold of our energy and enthusiasm. So we pared it down. Again, you know, we're a small school, but luckily we're in Los Angeles, and there's a lot of schools in Los Angeles with other interested, motivated people. So we were able to partner. We found another school to work closely with, and we opened it up to any school in the area. We really wanted to get a broad group of kids together, and it was a huge success. Huge in any measure, but relatively in this one. We had over 50 kids sign up. I think we had just under 40 come. They created products that were so mind-blowingly amazing, and we had several students who had never touched code that day at all.
So in operating with a smaller structure, we pared it down. We went with basically an 8-hour day or 10-hour day instead of a 24-hour situation. We provided food, and then we constrained the theme. We made it focus around teen health. We had experts come in and talk about things that they were researching or working on or developing, and then we gave them time to brainstorm ideas, form groups, and then just work. They worked on it for about 6 hours total. And then we went into prizes. We got sponsorship from like Snapchat and some other local organizations, which was really cool and made them really excited. Snapchat's like a big thing for kids these days. And then we had these specific prizes, right? So it wasn't just targeting the group that had the highest performing or the most functional code. We had three different categories. There's a link if you're playing along on the slideshow, or I've tweeted out the link to it. You can look and explore more, but we basically recognized three different areas. One was technical proficiency, one was marketability, and one was ambition. So we really wanted to recognize people that just tried, and you know, other things. So that was awesome. Oh, by the way, if you're in the Los Angeles area or you know anyone that is, we're doing it again next year and we'd really like you to be there. So please be in touch. And some other successes, I think Aaron touched briefly on this, just really, like David was saying, kind of bringing down that entry point, making it very accessible to anyone, so destigmatizing it, right? Not making it scary. So really low floor, high ceiling. In our attempt at making our class fun, we put up drawings of, you know, this is Ada Lovelace and some other people, like Tracy Chow is a current like female hero for us. We introduced computer science in middle school, if at all possible. This is really the point where you can get them, you can get their interest, and you can get them before they've chosen another track and have to invest all their time in that. We lose people in high school because they just don't have the course space. They don't. This other one is tricking teachers into integrating CS. Turns out there are a lot of teachers at our school that were actually really interested in what we were doing, but were a little intimidated or they were unsure. So doing workshops at some of our in-house PD, just showing them what we were doing, showing what the kids were doing. Aaron set up a website in our school that just shows what we were teaching in the classes and provided resources and let them click through it on their own. And that was actually huge because then by their own interest, they started integrating it into their own classes. So next year we're looking at integrating it into all of our math courses, for example, because we just got them interested in it. The science APs not being offered at our school, that was a success for the teachers because we didn't have to deal with it. But in the terms of challenges, it was kind of a downer for the students, right? The students wanted to take the AP test. So that was a challenge that we faced. Another really interesting thing, I mentioned competing with other subjects. So in that middle school program where I showed you, we have web app game design. We have other options. It was oftentimes hard for the students to decide because they could take dance, or they could take photography, or they could take web app game design. It didn't really feel fair. They're different things. Like, why should we have to compete with their opportunity to, you know, dance with their friends or to take pictures or to express themselves in this other creative way? So this is a really unfortunate aspect of our schedule, but it's also kind of an unfortunate thing when you're looking at, you know, you have limited time, your students have limited time, you have somebody that's also involved in the softball team or does basketball or sports or a family obligation part-time job. You know, you have to find your place among those things, and it was really challenging for us to insert ourselves when, you know, we're not in part of some of the main core curriculum and there's so many other things we're competing with.
I'm gonna add on to that too, is I met with a local like like after school computer science program that serves like our like some of the schools in more underprivileged areas in Los Angeles. And they're facing the same issue of like, there's no more room in a school day to have a computer science class for elementary and middle school. So like integrating it into math courses or science courses is like really where it's gonna work for a lot of people. Like we're lucky because we can make it an elective in the middle school, but we're still facing that issue of like, if kids are gonna learn computer science, we have to find a way to like integrate it into other courses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So scaffolding appropriately, you can talk to that one too.
Oh yeah, scaffolding appropriately. My seventh grade game design course, I had a few kids that were just like so ambitious, and then we're like, great, we're gonna learn Unity. And like hearing from another teacher at another middle school
said that Unity worked really well for them. But then I also realized that her gender ratio was different than ours. So like
10 boys to one girl.
Yeah, 10 boys to one girl. And then like once we got into like this program, some of the kids like got really into it, and some were just like, I'm so disengaged at this point. So it was kind of a bummer. Like as a teacher, I got so excited. I'm like, yeah, let's like learn this. But realizing like they're seventh graders, they could take dance instead. So they were like, oh, I'm kind of like gonna like disengage from this. So don't get too zealous and excited sometimes, because I know it's really hard being like, oh, this kid wants to learn this. But you also have to realize like,
yeah,
they have a million things on their plate. Sometimes yeah. challenging themselves that much mm-hmm. in a course is not appropriate for them.
I think also worth mentioning, like we have time. If you're getting them in middle school and they're interested, that's great. They're gonna, what, take the next course? If they blow through it and they take advanced CS their freshman year, what are they gonna do for their sophomore, junior, senior year? Mm-hmm. You don't wanna burn out too soon. There's time, there is, I think. So yeah, and beyond high school, another thing we think a lot about, right? You hear so much about women in tech. Have you seen any of the headlines recently? Or minorities in tech? Like, what's the gender diversity ratio at Google these days? I don't know, they won't publish on them because they're so bad. So it's kind of a scary world out there. And I think teaching computer science and getting them excited about computer science is all well and good, but you also need to be mindful about what is it you're really putting them up for? What industry are they moving into? And what are they gonna need to face there? What skills are they going to need to have there? So.
So to sort of sum up like what strategies for like inclusion in CS, we're thinking about like how to get the uninclined in computer science, not just girls. This is obviously from an all-girls school perspective. I sort of thought about this in three things. There's like the three things that you can control as a teacher are like your actions, your curriculum, and also, your actions in the classroom, your curriculum in the classroom, and then like, how do you present the subject to those outside your classroom, right? So these are called like supportive words and actions from one of our colleagues' friends, who's a professor at Harvey Mudd, I'm pretty sure, Daryl Young. So he came to our school and talked to us about like, again, like diversity and inclusion in STEM. And he was saying to value and allow students to demonstrate a broader range of competencies. So meaning like allow them to, you know, add their own creativity to projects and allow them to demonstrate things just beyond a multiple choice test, right? Affirm students' accomplishments, praise tenacity and effort, right? Be more aware of your interactions. I think Greg, you were saying yesterday how like having girls in your class, like walking down the hallway and just like saying, oh, like that was really good code and blah, blah, blah. Like really acknowledging your students, especially for girls and minorities, that helps them feel like, oh, I'm included in this class, right? Be more transparent about your instructional choices. Just letting kids know like, hey, we're gonna do this because I think this is good for this and this reason. Or sometimes like me where I'm like, I don't know, what is the best path forward? What do you guys want to learn, right? I mean, there is a freedom I have in my class to do that. Also, apologize when you mess up. That's normal. Culture of error, right? And then asking for feedback have been really successful. So in terms of curriculum, those low floor, high ceiling projects, meaning, you know, any student can jump in, get started, yet that project can get taken to a whole nother level, right? I constantly have extensions for all my projects, especially for middle school. If a kid feels like they're done, I'm always like, oh, well, what about this or this? Or like, why don't you test this with this person and like see what they say, right? That real world purpose, already kind of talked about, and then agency and their learning. So again, asking what they want to learn, really trying to pull in, like, what are you trying to get out of this class, right? That class group problem solving has been really effective for girls feeling like they're a part of it. And then sharing their projects with their community. And the important thing is letting the students decide on like which project they do present. So this is my seventh grade game design class. At the end of each semester, we invited other seventh grade classes at the time to come and teachers and to see them being able to like share their project with their peers and the adults that they respect, they had like so much fun, and it was so great to see how proud they were of things that they created. And it wasn't even necessarily their final project that they showed. Sometimes they showed a project that they did at the beginning of the class that they're like, I was so proud of this, like I want to show it off to people, right? So that's been really effective. So things that work outside the classroom, so providing those low risk opportunities for students with any programming experience. The hackathon, very successful, having these students who had not touched code ever come in, feel like they got to create something at the end that they're proud of. Curating a list of STEM opportunities, and we linked like our STEM website for Archer, where we actually have like a list of these opportunities for students.
They're both local and nationwide.
Yeah.
It's a full list.
Yeah, and our students use it to figure out what they want to do for the summer usually. And then I like Girls Who Code, it's free. I've had a few students come up to me and ask me about it, and I'm like, yes, absolutely do it. And then also unplugged computer science activities at community events. So we have something like, as an example, is Grandparents Day. You can assume from the title, grandparents come to campus. And so this year we did something new where they got to do like workshops of different subjects, and one of them was coding. And so to like give them an idea of what computer science is like, we just like walked away from any technology and did, you know, pseudocode and algorithms and things like that. And so it gave grandparents an idea of like, oh, like I didn't learn coding in school, but now I have an idea of at least what you're talking about. Right.
It's also really important, we think, to destigmatize it with other populations. A lot of students will get interested in Scratch, and their grandparents will say, like, this is all Greek to me. I don't understand it. It's so strange. Yeah. And it actually kind of removes them from that equation. So those connections are important. And I think if we can shift that perspective from saying, I don't get it, it's beyond me, to their family members saying, oh, you know what? I learned a little bit about that. That's cool. We feel like that could be, you know, the thing that tips them over into continuing to pursue it.
Mm-hmm. And then again, showcasing student artifacts and experiences, kind of like what I showed with my seventh grade class. Also in honors research, some students create like purely computer science projects. A student is currently like working on an app, and we have a like STEM symposium at the end of the year where these students get to like show their research and like show what technology they created.
Mm-hmm. It's all in like our school newsletter, in the weekly information bulletins, it's in the hallways, it's definitely celebrated in the halls.
Yeah.
And beyond.
Oh, and so things we don't know if it works yet. So though we've like taught a few colleagues, like our math teachers, and even then I felt like I was pretty hands off. I just kind of showed them like platforms that I use, and then they kind of went with it. But maybe getting like the less inclined teachers to learn a bit of code. Like I ran one workshop last year and had like a few English teachers in there, and part of it was they walked away saying like, oh, again, like I have an idea now of what these students are talking about. Thank you for showing me.
Mm-hmm. I think, and my lofty goal is to get our head of school programming, because
yeah.
That's somebody who has a presence at school, and we feel like if the kids could see that again, like anyone can do this, any person can do it, and not just the head of school, but also like our front receptionist and you know, our facilities crew, everyone. We want everyone to have access to it and to do it so that it creates that normalcy and that sense of culture.
Yeah, and then field trips. We did not take any this year, so we feel like that'd be pretty important to at least go beyond just our classroom. I mean, yes, they see videos, they know that they're part of CS50 community, they know that there's other people doing it, but I think they would definitely benefit from seeing, like, going to a tech company and seeing what it's like.
Yeah, if tech is so ubiquitous, I think a great idea would be to send them out and say, go find tech in the wild. What does it look like?
Yeah.
You said you had a partner at Harvey Mudd?
We had a colleague come and speak to us. Awesome place
Try
to visit.
And get where you can bring them to the computer engineering department, because I took my class to UConn.
Oh, really?
We just spent a day, and it was seniors from the computer science department taking the kids around the campus, showing them projects. It was, it works.
Amazing.
I did do a field trip with students for like UCLA Engineering Day, but like they hardly touched on computer science, and I was kind of bummed. But I got to find like computer science department,
Yeah, that's a good one.
Thanks for letting me know.
And I think that brings us to you. So you've heard a lot from us, and we're sure that you have a wealth of experience. So we would love to hear a bit from you and maybe talk a little bit about what kind of challenges you're facing and what ideas you have.